Hey everybody, this is Brian Sippets, and welcome to a very special episode 16 of the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. We're really excited about today's episode because we're going to have a bit of a change in format. Our buddy Anthony Renna, host of the Strength Coach Podcast, is going to be taking over hosting duties for the day and having a discussion with me about experiencing the evolution of training from a player's perspective, and also about my presentation for the upcoming Great Lakes Hockey Strength and Conditioning Clinic on May 9th. This is also a special episode. It's going to be serving double duty. It's being recorded as a Hockey Strength podcast and also the Hit the Gym with a Strength Coach segment of Strength Coach Podcast. So if you have any questions about today's episode, feel free to contact me at hockeystrengthpodcast@gmail.com. Otherwise, we look forward to the opportunity to be on strengthcoach.com also. Today, Anthony and I will be talking about my presentation for the Great Lakes Hockey Strength and Conditioning Clinic coming up May 9th, 2015 at Eastern Michigan University. This one-day event features seven of the Midwest's top coaches and presenters, and it's going to provide a ton of great information for anyone who works with hockey players. Our presenters include Joe Maher from the University of Michigan, Justin Rothlingscheffer from Miami University, and Daryl Nelson from USA Hockey's National Team Development Program. To check out the full schedule of presenters and topics, and to register for this great event, head to GreatLakesHockeyStrength.com. We've also been approved for 0.7 CEUs by the NSCA and NASM, so this is a great learning opportunity for those who are part of those organizations. Hope you'll be able to join us. In just a minute, Anthony's going to take over, but first, in case you aren't familiar with HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, it's the web's greatest collection of hockey strength and conditioning information, complete with material from the top NHL, collegiate, and private strength coaches. At HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, you'll find hundreds of articles, videos, programs, and webinars, all geared towards improving the performance of hockey players. So whether you're a strength and conditioning professional, a motivated player, youth coach, or hockey parent, HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com is the only training resource you'll ever need to produce healthier, stronger, more effective players at any level. New articles, videos, and programs are posted weekly, along with periodic podcasts and webinars. And all of our coaches weigh in on the ongoing forum discussions. If you're new to HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, you can gain access to our members-only content for just $1 for the first 7 days. You'll be able to check out training videos, current programs, and articles from some of the best strength coaches in hockey. Or they can answer your questions directly in the forum. We know you're going to love the content, but if you're not completely happy with it, simply cancel your trial membership and you'll be out just a buck. After the 7-day trial period, you can continue to be a member for just $14.95 a month, or you can sign up for the year at just $149 and receive 2 months free. Either option is an incredible bargain for so much material from these great coaches, so don't miss your chance to be a part of the community. All right, well, I'm excited for my conversation with our guest host, Anthony Renna, so let's get started with the Hit the Gym with the Strength Coach segment of the Strength Coach Podcast.
All right, now it's time for the Hit the Gym with the Strength Coach, and today we have a special feature or a special interview. We're actually, this podcast, this interview is going for, obviously, not only the Strength Coach Podcast, but the Hockey Strength Podcast, and because the person that I'm interviewing, Brian Sippets, who is actually the owner of Advantage Strength and Conditioning in Ann Arbor, he's also the owner of HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, and he does the Hockey Strength Podcast for HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. So, Brian, thanks for coming on today.
Anthony, thanks for having me.
All right. Well, this is a first that we're doing. So we're breaking ground here. This is going to be on two podcasts, so I'm pumped about that.
Yeah, I appreciate the help for sure. This is, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, it'll be fun. So I want to start off by a little bit about you because, I mean, we've had people like yourself who have been at a high level and in a sport and gone on to strength and conditioning. I don't think somebody's been as high as you. You were drafted in the fourth round in the NHL by Atlanta Thrashers in 2001, and you spent 7 years in the AHL, American Hockey League. So certainly approaching this from a unique perspective, being at such a high level, talk to me about how you feel your background has helped you, you know, not only with the strength and conditioning part, but obviously it's how to help with your marketing as well. Cause I mean, people want to be with somebody, and we're seeing that with Gary Roberts right now in his training facility, having that unique background and going to strength and conditioning. So talk to us about how your background has helped and, you know, not only with your training, but with your business.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Gary Roberts is a prime example of that. I mean, a guy that not only had the career that he had, but also the story that he has, persevering, getting through injury and coming back to play maybe the best years of his career after that injury. So he's a walking, talking, example of why it's great to have the experience, the playing experience when you're opening a business. You know, for me, it's good for marketing, like you said. The first thing the kids will do, I work with a lot of youth athletes. The first thing the kids will do is look up, YouTube videos and see like that, stuff like that. And I didn't fight a lot when I played, but I did fairly well in the fights that I did have. So, I get a little instant street credit with the kids right off the bat. But you know, in terms of programming and kind of understanding athletes, I think the most valuable thing is just kind of knowing where guys are at certain points in the season. You know, I played, seasons where I had 80 games a year. I played seasons where I had, you know, 40 games a year and lots of practices in college. So I guess I understand where the athletes are, where the kids are at certain points in the season. You know, can we push here? I know that guys in the fall are going to be a little more apt to push. And, once we get into the spring, it's more about, you know, making sure they're at their peak. So it's a little bit more of an equation. Like, can we take a little bit of, energy out of the bank account right now to get some gains out of this next 2 weeks? Or is this a bad time? So yeah, I think that's the most important thing is that I've been there and I have a feel for, look, I know you're tired right now. I know it's late in the season. I know you've got playoffs coming up and, So I think I can relate that way and get that connection with the athletes.
And there's got to be a little bit more buy-in too from, or an easier buy-in because it's coming from you.
Yeah. And you know, that's that connection. You know, and I can have discussions and almost call it and say, look, I know you're feeling this right now. Is that right? It's like, well, yeah, that's exactly how I feel. And, you know, a lot of it too is I've been on bad teams and I've been on good teams. I've been on teams that do well with, maybe a bad locker room. So all those years of playing experience, they bring certain, you know, I've experienced certain situations and know where the guys are at there. So I can almost say, you know, what's going on and almost tell from their answer how the season's going and how the team is doing and stuff like that. And then I can relate from there and kind of get the most out of a day with players who, you know, maybe are lacking energy or not excited about their team.
Yeah, absolutely. I also, I mean, while we're on your experience, let's talk about, you know, Coach Boyle talks about the evolution of a strength coach and that a lot of times, like a lot of young guys who start out with, you know, bodybuilding and then they go into powerlifting and then they get hurt and then they start to work on injury prevention. And I think, you know, we look at your career, the timing of when you came up. So late 90s, you're in your teens and you're playing at a high level. And you go to college, you get drafted in your first year of college, which is 2001. And we've seen so many changes over the last, you know, 10, 11 years. You've actually witnessed those changes as a player, because you were really in the thick of all of these changes as a player. Talk to us about some of, the changes that you've seen and what are obviously in your opinion, you know, that are the most positive changes that have stuck with you.
Sure. So my first time really experiencing anything like as an organized workout was when I went to college. I went to a boarding school and, you know, training, lifting wasn't really a thing. You played your sport. So when I got to college, our strength coach was, Dan Dalrymple, who's been with the Saints for, I think 15, 16 years now. And, you know, great strength coach. That was the strongest I've ever been. But, you know, as we know now, it was a little bit more like, I always kind of relate it to, I felt more like a bulldozer than a sports car. Like, you know, lots and lots of bilateral lifts, lots of clean, lots of snatch, you know, back squats, bench press, and then the quote unquote accessory lifts. And that's the way it was done. We were basically on the football lifting program as a hockey team. So there was still a lot of, you know, maxing out and that. And I didn't really know enough about periodization at the time to really take a good look and know what was going on. And I don't remember what the numbers were like. But I just know it was big lifts and then some accessory things on the side, which is kind of how it went at that point in time. And that was 4 years, 4 years of that. And like I said, I was the strongest, I've ever been in terms of lifting in the weight room, but I never really felt like, that translated for me as a player. So then when I started playing in Chicago, in the American League, we had a guy named Rob Rosmus who came in with some different stuff. You know, a lot more lunge patterns, a lot more split leg work and, resisted runs, all this kind of stuff that we now know is a little bit, is a lot more functional and better for injury prevention and translates better into sport. And it was kind of nice. You know, it was a nice change that I didn't have to stand under a bar. And, you know, at that point, it is more about, you know, as a 25, 26 year old, it's more about, for me, it was more about kind of maintaining and keeping myself ready for 80 games in a season. So it was nice and kind of refreshing to not have to stand under the bar and have those days in the weight room. You know, so that's the biggest change is we went from really big weights. Well, really big weights for me, probably not really big weights for everybody else, but, you know, and these big, you know, back squats and bench presses into things that were definitely more functional. Now at the time I didn't really know what was going on, but you know, cause I wasn't really in the field at that point. I know I was good at the training. I also worked with a guy named Sean Karp out in Vancouver for a couple of summers who kind of got me off of the lifting really heavy and getting a lot more functional, kind of thing. So you're right, I did end up kind of living it, just through the nature of, you know, college team workout to my own summer training. I kind of started getting a hint of it there, but then once I was in Chicago, we really got the full kind of functional training, the whole functional training idea. And I still felt strong, and definitely felt more like, more agile on the ice and definitely more functional, more, athletic, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Cause that while you were saying that, I mean, it didn't sound, you know, to me, the positives were you were really strong. So I was going to ask, you know, what's wrong with that? I mean, were there any injuries that you feel like were sustained because of, you know, the way you were lifting, you know, and then, you know, transitioning? What it sounded like to me was more of a mental break. It was more of, okay, you know, you probably enjoyed going into the weight room a little bit more, and maybe it was a little more, it wasn't as taxing on your body. Would that be a fair assessment? I mean, it wasn't like you were doing bad things at the time, because it doesn't sound like it affected you. I mean, you did play in the AHL.
Yeah, you know, there's, it's tough to say, really. I think what, I enjoyed the college workouts because it was a college team, and there's really nothing else there's really nothing else like that where it's a bunch of guys who are going to be together for sure. Nobody's getting traded. You know, you're with your team for the year. And those are great. Those are great team workouts. Now, as a pro, it's more like an optional thing, I think, for the most part. Because you have guys at different levels and different points in their career and stuff like that. But, you know, like I said, I think I felt really strong, but I didn't feel super athletic. And, you know, the other side of that is now if I were to picture myself going back to those workouts from college, it would almost make me cringe. You know, I'm still fairly strong, but the workouts that I lead every day, you know, we're working with kids. We're not using a ton of weight at this point. And if I were to, you know, I have had back issues, and really that's about the biggest issue that I've had is my back. And I think a lot of my tolerance was used up maybe early on in my college career. So I do think there is something to that. You know, they talk about, I think Mike Boyle talks a lot about tolerance and capacity, you know. So I think I may be mistaking one for the other, but I think that I used a lot of that bank account. I think I used it a lot in college, and now I have to train this way. I have to train in split stance or, you know, rear foot elevated in those positions there, because my back is definitely the weakest link. If I'm trying to get, you know, heavy weights on the squat, on a standard front squat or back squat, my back is definitely the weakest link. So I have to be split for my own health at this point. And I got to believe that there was some wear and tear along the way. And obviously playing a sport for a living is going to take a toll like that. But I think I did, you know, extend my career by changing the way I trained.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's interesting because I think, you know, we normally take the way we trained, like, and that's kind of a mistake a lot of times, right? Like a lot of guys, I mean, you hear that from coaches, from strength coaches, their problem with sometimes with coaches is that they're just training. They want to train everybody the way they trained in school. And it's kind of funny how, you know, you've evolved, and it's usually the opposite with somebody who's kind of, you know, got into the strength and conditioning field. It's more like, no, that was the wrong way to do it, or not so much the wrong way, but we have better ways, a better approach. So, I think it's definitely an interesting, you know, approach to it. When you look back at it, and what do you feel like? I mean, we have this discussion on the podcast a lot because, in terms of sports specific, right? I have a golf fitness facility. And a lot of times people are like, well, you know, you don't really need to be sports specific. From a hockey perspective, what are some things, you know, again, you know, your unique background, you played it. What are some things that you really feel you want to work with hockey players?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we get the sports specific thing a lot. We've got strength and conditioning at the end of the title. So people kind of get the idea that it's a sports performance place. And, we get that a lot, and I think it goes back to Mike Boyle's Coach Speak article. You know, you can basically cater your conversation to any sport. Now, hockey does have some unique demands on the hips. I think hockey and soccer kind of can be lumped into a lot of the same needs in terms of hip training. And one of the biggest things for hockey players is, you know, are we training that? Do we have proper mobility in the hips to kind of reduce the likelihood of an ab injury or a sports hernia or something like that? And those are things that are occurring more and more and more. Groin injury, low ab injuries. you know, and a lot of that comes from getting out from underneath the bar. And, you know, this is something I didn't touch on earlier, but a lot of that, you know, you really can't train laterally if you're doing a bilateral lift or a standard squat, standard back squat or front squat. So, you know, we're going to train in three dimensions, and that's really important for the hips, especially if you take a snapshot of a hockey stride. You've got one leg extended way out to the side. If you're in a full stride extension, the other hip is at maybe 45 degrees, and knees at 90 degrees. You know, so you get these big angles in a movement that people aren't used to. You can't run. That's the other thing about hockey, is that there's very little that can mimic what you do on the ice. So it's really, really important for us to get into those positions and use the stride board where you're pushing side to side. It's a unique stress on the hips that can mimic skating. And basically the lateral training and the is crucial because of the forced abduction. The forced adduction, adduction, getting that leg back underneath. And that's where you get the groin injuries, the hip injuries, the hip flexor injuries and the low ab injuries. So that's probably the biggest point of emphasis for us, is to get out to the side and get rotating too, and get out of just that single plane. And I know that's important for everybody. That's where that sport specific argument comes in. You know, that's overall health. And then you're basically building, we're looking to build strength and power, just like any other sport is. So it's about catering your argument or your conversation with a parent. It's about weaving in what sport term, whatever sport you're talking about, use the terms of that sport to talk about how you train, and that's for overall strength and power and reducing injuries.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like to use the term priorities. I mean, I think you and I are doing a lot of the same things. So I just have different priorities, and you have different priorities from me. So I think it's similar. So
sure.
Coach, let's talk about, you guys have, you and Daryl Nelson, who are basically the two owners for HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. You guys are doing your first clinic this year, and you're one of the speakers. So before I get to your talk, just give us an overview, a quick overview of the clinic.
Sure. So we've partnered up with Eastern Michigan University, who's doing some great research on hockey players. Believe it or not, they don't have a D1 team, but we've partnered up with them to kind of present this clinic. And Daryl and I thought that it would be important to have a live event and bring in some of the top speakers in the Midwest. So we've got Joe Marr from the University of Michigan. We've got Justin Rothling-Sheffer from Miami University. Those are two big-time hockey programs, collegiate hockey programs. We've also got Steve McGregor, who's a professor of physiology at Eastern Michigan University, and a couple of the national team development program. Daryl is a strength coach for the national team development program, and also their skating coach, Kerry Kyle. So we've got a great lineup of speakers that, we're all hockey people. We all work primarily with hockey people, with hockey athletes. We think it's going to be a great day and a great way for people to learn. You know, there's a lot of coaches that are like hockey coaches that are in charge of their own program, or at least in charge of hiring it out. So we want to make sure that people around here, Detroit area is a huge hockey area. And we want to make sure that people around here are responsible with their training, and if they aren't doing the training themselves, making sure that they're finding someone who is responsible. So this is our way of kind of educating that.
Cool. When is that?
That's on May 9th, coming up here on May 9th at Eastern Michigan University.
Cool. And it's just the one day, right?
Yeah, just one day. It's from 8:30 to 5, so it is a full day, but it should be great if you work with hockey players in any capacity.
Awesome. Good stuff. Now your lecture is going to be Know the Science, Create the Art. Give us an overview of what you're going to be talking about.
Yeah. So this is, kind of based on the art of coaching. And, you know, that's a term that, you know, can be a little bit tough to grab, or, you know, what exactly is that? It seems almost untouchable sometimes. It's just something that people throw out there, and it's something you have or you don't. But really, if you look at artists, you know, it's people who are making a connection. And I got to thank, you know, this whole thing came about. I was listening to a, you know, a lecture by Nick Winkelman, who's with Exos, and also Brandon Bovey, who's a strength coach in Prague in the Czech Republic. You know, these are guys that kind of turned me on to the how cool some of the things are in coaching. And it's not just go out and set up drills and whatever. As a strength coach, it's not just teaching lifts. It's can you connect with guys, and can you use what science tells us to really instruct and teach these guys? So, you know, I think a lot of clinics or seminars or conferences are based around learning about the body, or learning about physiology, learning about functional relationships. And those are all great. That's part of your job as a strength coach, is to understand those things. But the other part of that is the coach side of it. You know, there's guys, Mike Robertson has material out on DVD. Eric Cressy has things out on DVD, programs out on DVD, but I bet the results aren't going to be the same in every place. So coaching is the difference. Coaching is what matters. And that's what kind of got me interested in this track. Understanding more about how much coaching really goes into it. And the cool thing about it is when you start looking into things, it's almost like having little tricks up your sleeve or little tools in your toolkit that create that art of coaching. So the art of coaching, really all it is weaving together things that have been, you know, proven scientifically, or things that are shown in the lab, these ideas, weaving those things together in order to connect with somebody and to be able to teach them. You know, and I'll give you an example of that. So, you know, in terms of connection, they've done studies. There's a French study that shows that if a waitress comes over and touches a patron on the arm when she's getting his order, or makes a joke and touches this guy's upper arm or customer's upper arm, her tips are higher. All right. So there's that idea of a physical connection. Okay. So if you're talking to an athlete, maybe standing next to him, put your hand on his back and try to explain something to him, that just gives you one more little trick, you know, to connect with that athlete and to really, and when you get your connection, that's when you get buy-in from your athletes. That's when you get, maybe the most compliance. And so that's what we're looking for. We're looking for that connection. And so really, I think, the art of coaching is, it seems like a big thing, but really it's just putting together these little tricks and these little tools. And you kind of have to do it differently for each athlete. But when you understand that, it makes that a little bit easier, to get in it, and you get to improve your art of coaching that much more. I just think it's so cool that you can affect somebody in that way. And it's almost like a little trick up your sleeve. And when you see the improvement, that's when it really pays off.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think when, you know, there was a time when, especially, you know, when Nick and I were talking years ago about this, and he was asking me about, you know, because he was on the show a lot, and he was like, well, what do you want to talk about? And I would always say, you know, no one's really talking about the coaching aspect. And, you know, I think when you're relatively new to this field, like I was, you know, I've been doing this for about 11 years. And at the time when I first started the podcast, I'd only really been in the game for, you know, 3 or 4 years. And it just, you know, I think you get frustrated because you hear all of this, you know, here's my, you know, my guy, Mike Boyle and Mark Verstegen, they've been doing it for, you know, 25 years and 15 years already. And at the time, and you know, you feel like, you know, am I ever going to get this? Is it only about experience? But I think what's really kind of emerged, and really what I feel like Nick Winkelman has done such a great job in terms of taking a lot of that information that was there and was on the outside and bring it to strength and conditioning, you know, really in a systematic way. It's kind of interesting that you can really – it's like a whole new language. And I don't think everybody – although I still think you need experience – you know, there is a system and there are things, like you said, tricks up your sleeve that you can use to kind of become a better coach. What are some other things that you feel like from that perspective of creating the art that we should be doing?
You know, it's just, like I said, it's little things. Number one, you're absolutely right. A lot of it is experience. And, you know, the situation that I'm in here with my business is I have great coaches that are coaching all around me. You know, I see Daryl coach. I see, we have a skating treadmill in our facility and Carrie Kyle coaches on that. So I hear that all the time and just, you know, you hear what they're saying, but then as you learn more and more, as you develop yourself as a coach, it sort of clicks in and you're like, oh, that's why she says that, you know, or that's why she says it that way. And the more you're immersed in that, the more natural it becomes. So there is a certain amount of experience to it, but you can kind of accelerate your process or your learning curve by knowing some of these things. For example, and you know, and these are things that Nick would talk about too. You know, in terms of instruction, are you talking about the body too much? So are you saying, you know, heels down or butt back, or, you know, are you instructing in that way, or are you tying your instructions to the outside world? So, push your shoes to the floor, or, you know, get your head closer to the ceiling. You know, are these things that you're using? If you're saying, stand straight, you know, maybe that doesn't resonate or that doesn't mean something or mean anything, but, you know, they're showing in the lab, Gabrielle Wolf is one of the leading researchers in this area about, where do you put people's attention when you're trying to teach a skill? Where should you put their attention? And it's basically a whole book. And what it boils down to, in study after study is, are you using external cues? Are you, giving them external feedback? So when we talk about, you know, moving a bar, you say, or say a dumbbell snatch, are you going to just get the bell above your head, or are you going to throw it through the ceiling? You know, so it's just those subtle differences that can make such a big difference. And that's why, you know, as a coach, I smile if somebody's not getting it, or, you know, if another coach is, or a younger coach is working with somebody, and then I can come over and give one cue and all of a sudden, you know, things come together. That's what makes me smile. And that's pretty much the inspiration behind this topic. It's just, there's so much that you can do to learn it, to help your athletes learn, that isn't based on, you know, just straight FMS or PRI or whatever. So there's, I think, you know, you mentioned it, there's a big part of the education as a coach that's lacking because of the volume of information out there that's more related to the body. And the bottom line is, if you have all that information in your head, that's great. But if you can't get it to affect other people, then it really does them no good. And that's the game you're in, is really improving clients or athletes or patients or students, whoever.
Absolutely. I think right now we really need a lot, you know, for the most part. And again, Nick's done a great job. We've had to look to outside resources to really get this information. Do you have any other resources that you recommend that you use besides, you know, we were talking about Gabrielle Wolf, but what other resources have you used? Do you have any?
Yeah, you know what? I think in terms of the coaching, it's been such valuable information that I'm really trying to absorb all that Gabrielle Wolf stuff. And, you know, the other author, I guess, is a former professor of mine at Miami. Her name's Sion Bylock, and she's written a couple books. One's called Choke, and the newest one is called How Your Body Knows Its Mind. And it's basically about, number one, the first book is about, you know, why do people choke under in the highest pressure situations and how do we prevent that? And it's a lot of the same, you know, a lot of the same findings. She actually does a lot of work with golfers, and she set up a putting green in the lab and said, well, what kind of makes people choke on putts that matter? Is it, you know, are they given too much time? Are they thinking too much? And bottom line, what it comes to is when the chips are down, people tend to kind of overthink things too much. And basically what it gets back to is, instead of, you know, thinking about where you're going to strike the ball or even closer to the body, where, you know, how should I move my hands in a putt? Really, you should be thinking about, you know, the path of the ball. So it gets back to that idea of the closer you're thinking, if you're trying to organize a movement, but especially one that's automatic, as a putt would be for an experienced golfer, the closer you are to your body in thought or attention, the worse off you're going to be. You start to derail processes that are already in motion that you could do in your sleep, and you start to derail those and the result doesn't turn out well. You end up choking. So really it's kind of getting back to not overthinking things, first of all, not giving yourself too much time to interrupt what is a natural movement for you, a movement that you've experienced a lot, but also getting back to that, you know, external focus. You're thinking about the path of the ball rather than the movement of your hip or movement of your wrist. We see the same thing in tennis. They've done studies on tennis players that, you know, if you really want to screw with an opponent, you could say, hey, I love that topspin you get on your forehand there. Show me how do you do that? You know, what are your steps to go through that? And that's such an automatic process for an experienced tennis player that as soon as you ask them to walk through it, you know, it tends to derail their ability to perform it naturally or automatically. So I think, you know, Sion Bylock's another one who is kind of cracking the code there in terms of performance. And those are the two that I focused on and really tried to digest what they had to say. But, you know, I know Joseph Drabik's another one. He's more on the physiological side, especially with youth. You know, and that also speaks a lot more to kind of when developmental windows of opportunity. You know, is this athlete ready to receive this kind of training or this kind of instruction? So, you know, like I said, the art of coaching is pretty much weaving all those things together. You know, you have all these things in your head, and you know how to instruct, and you know how to teach. You're really, as a strength coach or a teacher, doesn't matter what you can lift. It's how can you teach what you know. So really the art of coaching is weaving all those things together. And the more tools you have, the more chances you're going to have to connect with your athletes.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, Brian, I want to first remind everybody that this is the Great Lakes Hockey Strength and Conditioning Clinic, and it's going to take place on May 9th at Eastern Michigan University. And you can register, you know, just go to hockeystrengthandconditioning.com, or you can go to greatlakeshockeystrength.com. We'll have those links on our site. And Brian is going to be speaking. His topic is Know the Science, Create the Art, Improving the Art of Coaching with Evidence-Based Knowledge. So, Brian, thanks again so much for coming on today.
Anthony, thanks for having me. That was great.
Well, that's going to wrap up episode 16 of the Hockey Strength Podcast. Don't forget, you can hear my full presentation and some from the Midwest region's top hockey strength coaches at the very first Great Lakes Hockey Strength and Conditioning Clinic being held at Eastern Michigan University on May 9th. Get more information and register at greatlakeshockeystrength.com. This is Brian Sippets for the Hockey Strength Podcast. I want to send a big thank you to Anthony Renna for hosting today. Check back with us in a week or so to hear episode 17, where we'll be speaking with our next Great Lakes presenter, Carrie Kyle. Carrie is the power skating coach for the National Team Development Program, and she'll be presenting on considerations of stride mechanics and strength training, so we look forward to hearing about that. Until next week, be sure to train smart, and check out hockeystrengthandconditioning.com for the web's greatest articles, videos, and programs for training hockey players. Thanks for listening, everybody.